Thank you. My name is Kelvin Daniels. I'm an alcoholic. Sober today to the grace of God. We're Alcoholics Anonymous. Fantastic sponsorship. I've been sober since October 10th, 1996, and for that I'm truly grateful. And I want to say, first off, I really want to thank the committee for having me come here tonight. It's an honor and a privilege whenever I'm asked to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I've been getting teased for about 3 weeks because back in Fargo, we call Oregon. And I get a text message. I'm on the way here, and it's one of my buddies, Chad, and he says, make sure you say Oregon correctly so they don't laugh at you. And so I'm sitting in the car going, Oregon. And just making sure that I got that right because I don't want to sound like I'm not from here. I want to be accepted and loved everywhere I go. And I really want to thank Richard and the committee. It's been wonderful. And my host, Mike, is amazing. I mean, I get a chance to go and talk in AA and be of service, and I love that. And Mike should teach like a hosting clinic. I mean, if you ever want to do a little side work, man, I mean, you can just go around and be like, this is how you treat people, because it's been warm and friendly and full of love, and I'm just really excited to be here. And yes, this is a heat wave. We had a cold snap go through. It's been about 20 below in Fargo for about the last 2 weeks. And it was 7 above when I drove to the airport this morning. And I get off the plane, and this is like Bermuda. I mean, it's like, I haven't had a coat on, you know, and some of the guys that drove up from Fargo, they're wearing shorts. And it's really nice, and I got to tell you the story about that real quick. My home group's on Tuesday night, and at the meeting, after the meeting, we go to coffee, and we're sitting there at coffee. Take a message. I'll get that later. I'm at coffee, and one of the guys, I won't say who he is, but he just read the traditions, just lost his job, and. And one of the other guys is brand new, just moved into town. And he goes, why don't we just drive to Oregon? And I'm like, okay, you know. And so people say, it's so wonderful that they came here to hear you talk. And I'm like, they can hear me talk anytime. They came to go to the ocean, you know. And because it's like 60 here, that's why they're here. That's the reason why they're here. Book tells me I'm supposed to share in a general way what I was like, what happened, and what I'm like today. And it's kind of a funny thing for me because as I think about how I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and about alcoholism as a disease that it is, I'm a kid that's been irritable, restless, and discontent my whole life. I didn't have those words to describe the feelings that I had growing up, but I had those feelings. I'm the type of kid that no matter what happens, it's not good enough for me. I'm the guy that raises the bar to the point where you cannot perform at the level that I need you to. And so you got to go. I'm that guy. I'm born and raised that way. I had symptoms of alcoholism well before I ever took a drink. And I had an identity crisis growing up, and it was kind of a funny deal. You may not have noticed this, but I'm a little darker skinned than the rest of the crowd, except for Mike. Hey, how you doing? But it was a funny thing for me growing up because I didn't know what I was because my mom is white and my dad's black. And so I'm sitting there checking other on these little tests in school because I didn't know what the hell I was. And I'm having this problem. And people say, well, what are you? People ask me if I'm Samoan. And I think that's because I'm fat and it makes me mad when they say that. So, you know, no, I'm not Samoan. That's the first thing. But if you can kind of just get a mental picture, if you get the true context of what I am, it's a Viking ship with 20s on it and fried chicken, you know? I mean, that kind of a deal. My name would be like Tyrone Oley, you know? I mean, that's kind of who I am. And I grew up having this feeling of indifference. And I'm the guy that's had a hole in his gut his whole life. The kind of hole that when you look at me, you don't look at a guy like me, you look through me. And the kind of hole that when the wind blows, it feels like it comes out of my back. And I know that there's a piece of me missing somehow, somewhere. I just can't put my finger on what the heck it is. So I go through life feeling disconnected from. And I remember feeling that way from the entire time I was growing up. And I have this feeling that comes over me, and I love the way Clancy said it, that I'm a feeler. I seem to feel things more intensely than other people. And when that happened, and I've got to share the story. Valentine's Day was just earlier this week, and AA is a healing program. And when I was in sixth grade, my teacher said, nobody has to give a Valentine to anybody that doesn't want to. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking about it, and I don't know about you, but I had resentments in sixth grade. I'm a good alcoholic, so I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm not giving one to Jenny, and I'm not giving one to Steve, and I'm not giving one to the teacher because I hate Mr. Nelson, you know, and and my mom looks at me and she says, but Kelvin, how would you feel if nobody gave you a Valentine? Let me tell you how that feels. We had a big deal where we had to decorate all of our Valentine's boxes, and it was a big deal, you know, and during that time, G.I. Joes were real big when I was a kid, so I had like G.I. Joes in my Valentine's box. I love you, Valentine, you know, like shooting people and stabbing and stuff like that, and that was my Valentine's box, and the teacher goes, all right, go. So I'm going around, and I'm putting these Valentines in, and so these people know how lucky they really are. I made one for everyone. And I get back to my box, and I pick it up, and it's a little light. Tear the top off. I didn't get one, not even from the teacher. And and I told that story. I was talking in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, and I told that story. And it was, and I think it was like November when I told the story, or January. And here on December or on February 14th that year, there's a FedEx package in my door, and it is full of AA Valentines. I mean, it is just chock full of these things. I mean, people's kids were writing them. I mean, there's a paw print on one, I'm pretty sure. I mean, it was amazing, you know? And I'm the guy that feels that stuff. Because what my real deal is my big secret is I'm really not enough. My big secret is that I don't know how to come out and play. And I got a chance to come out and play when I was about 12 or 13 years old, because I got a chance to drink for the first time. And I shouldn't say for the first time, but for the first time to get the true effect. The effect that happens within me when I get the right amount of juice on board. And at that point in time, I knew how to connect, I knew how to come out and play, I knew how to look you in the eye and not be afraid anymore, because damn it, I'm here now. Because I got it on. It's go time. The theme music comes in slowly in the background. And then all of a sudden you hear, it's time to go. And then boom, I arrive. And I love the way Bill Wilson said it. I arrived. And I just get this feeling that I talk about booze like that and I kind of get jittery. I'm like, ooh, that was fun, you know? Because at the beginning it was for me. In the beginning when I got the chance to drink, it was the thing that in my case probably prevented a teenage suicide. Because I am a feeler by my nature. And when you're irritable and restless and discontent like that, and you get a chance to have some type of solution that comes into you, it is the thing that you want to do forever and ever and ever. So I went through and started to drink. And I'm a guy who fell in love with drinking. I really consider drinking to be my first spiritual experience. And I don't say that in jest, I mean that, because for me, drinking was the thing that brings the light on. And what I found out after coming to Alcoholics Anonymous was that I really have two pieces that are wrong with me. I have the phenomenon of craving that develops when I take a drink. When I take a drink of alcohol, the magic happens, the switch flicks on, and I know that I need to get more, but I don't know if I'm going to have one more or if I'm going to have 100 more. For a guy like me, one is too many and 1,000 is not enough. So if that's my only problem drinking, then I would be one of those people that were just a heavy drinker. Once you clean up my act, I would be fine. Once you remove me and I get out of detox or jail or some lockdown facility, I would be okay. Because for a guy like me, I started suffering consequences very early for my drinking. I'm the type of person that my mom looked at me and said, well, I'll get to that in a second. I'm the kind of person that has wonderful intentions. If you judge me on my intentions, I could be the Pope. I'm not even Catholic, you know. I would be Kelvin the First, you know. I mean, I would be like Kelvin Paul or something. I mean, by my intentions, I am just wonderful. But it's my actions that come in and screw everything up. And it's that thing, because I never once woke up in the morning, never one time did I wake up in the morning and said, you know, tonight I want my mom to look at me and say she's ashamed she ever gave birth to me. I wasn't a guy who ever said that. I never once woke up in the morning and said, you know, tonight when I wake up, I want to be in jail because I'm really sick of food and my own good food and my own clothes. You know, I never said that. I never once woke up in the morning and said, you know, tomorrow when I wake up, I want to be covered in blood that's not mine and not remember where I've been. I never once said any of those things. Those are all things that happen to me, though, because I don't go out with the intention for anything like that to happen. I don't go out with the intention to have any of the malady that happens within me when I start to drink, start to create and roll and just start picking up speed. That is not my intention when I pick up a drink. My intention is to have a little fun. My intention is to make this hole that's in my gut close up for a little bit so I can look you in the eye and not have to be afraid. Now, I'm one of those guys that's a very fearful person. And because I'm a fearful person, I figure there's only a couple things to do when you're afraid like me. You can either hide in a hole or beat people up. And hiding in a hole seemed kind of boring, so I tried the second one. And as a result of that, I'm a guy that's been in over 250 street fights. I did that. I've seen things done to God's kids and done things to God's kids nobody's ever supposed to see or do. But I never had that intention. I never meant to do that. I never meant to hurt people. But that's who and what I become when I start to drink. So I go through school and I'm a guy who did really well in sports, and I had scholarship offers all across the United States, not in Oregon, or maybe I'd ended up here. I had scholarship offers all across the United States, and I got this opportunity to go to the Air Force Academy. And I get flown out by the government, and I visit this campus in Colorado Springs. This place is gorgeous. And they say, all you got to do is get 2 points higher in the math section. You're in, you know? You're in. And I'm like, wow, all right, I'm going to go do this. I don't know what you start to click through in your mind, but that's a lot of pressure. I don't know how you handle pressure, but me, I have a couple drinks because I need to study, right? So I'm going to have a couple drinks, and everything's going to be okay for a little bit. And when I have a couple of drinks, that turns into 5:30 in the morning for me. My test was at 7:30. I failed. I didn't get in. So I stay in, and I play at a local school, and I lose my scholarships, and I get thrown out. And they say, you know, you're not going to come and attend state university anywhere in North Dakota again. You know, you're gone. And I can't believe these things are happening because, see, I'm not that way. I just want to be loved. You know, and as an alcoholic, I'm alcoholics are the only people that I know that want to completely detach from people, but be hugged while we do it. You know, it's like, get away from me, you know, and I just want that, you know, but big tough guys don't say that. Big tough guys say, get away from me. And then later on when they're alone is when they put their head down in their hands. And I lived that way, and it was embarrassing for me because I always thought I had control. I always thought I had control. And people would come up to me and they'd say, the problem is you need to go back to church. You know, that's going to save you. That's your problem. You see, if you had God, then you wouldn't do the things you do and you wouldn't drink like that. And that's kind of a funny thing because for me, my dad is Southern Baptist. So the holy book is in the house, the sword of God, you know, it's in there. He would bring Jehovah Witnesses in, and then he would like battle them, and they'd leave there wondering why they're Jehovah Witnesses. You know, I mean, it was like crazy around my house. And it was crazy. And I was the president of the National Lutheran Youth Fellowship League for the state of North Dakota. Can you believe that? I had God. I was the number one graduation student from my confirmation class. I got to give a 10-minute sermon the next Sunday, and everybody came up and told me, you should really think about joining the faith and carrying God's message. And they're doing that. They're saying all this stuff to me. So I'm sitting there, and I'm wondering, if I've got God, and I'm still doing this stuff. So apparently, you're all wrong. Ha-ha! And, you know, I get this thing in my head that says that you're wrong because if he was so great, I wouldn't be where I am. So I came to AA with that on my shoulder. I came to AA with this idea of God, and I hated Alcoholics Anonymous. I got here, I came to my first meeting on a Thursday, and I hadn't showered since Sunday, and I was a construction worker at the time. There was no cologne covering up the funk coming off of me. I was dirty, and I stunk, you know. And I had hair back then, and it was kind of this weird afro thing, and I had concrete chunks, and I had these patches of hair coming off of my face, and this nasty goatee. I kind of looked like a chia pet on crack, is what I looked like, you know. I had all this stuff sticking out all over the place, and I walk into my first meeting like that, and I sit down, and as I'm walking in the door, of course, you know, I'm a tough guy, so I show up at 7:59 and 58 seconds for the 8 o'clock meeting, and this guy walking in, he's the last smoker, you know, okay, let's go, you know, and he's in the door, and he says, "Welcome to me." And now, at this point in time in my life, hearing "welcome" is a crazy thing. Because nobody says welcome to me anymore. Nobody does. And I can't figure out by this time in my life why I continue to drink. Because I already said that if you wake up out of jail, or if you wake up by the things that I've been told, if my only problem was a phenomenon of craving, then I wouldn't need to be here. But I have this second thing that's wrong with me. I've got the obsession of the mind. I've got the thing that tells me it's going to be okay to take the next drink. You know, yeah, man, you know, that was because you were drinking whiskey. You know, everybody gets crazy when they drink whiskey, you know. You need to try tequila. Try a little Mexican flavor, you know. You know, do that. You know, try that stuff. You know, no. The last time you did that, you peed on somebody. That's a bad thing, you know. You go over here, you need to stick to just pure malt liquor. Yeah, that's what it is. Let's get down to the brewed nature of things, you know. And no, that's not going to work. Kharkov vodka. $9.98 a 175. I'm convinced that a potato's never been near Kharkov. That stuff's made of paint thinner and strained through underwear that's been worn for 3 days. That stuff's terrible. I mean, that Kharkov. Ugh. I still get that little gaggy thing in the back of my mouth when I say Kharkov. It's like Kharkov, you know. No, Kharkov, I still get in trouble with Kharkov. So apparently there's something in my head that is not right. You know, in the doctor's opinion, it tells me that physically I'm different, mentally I'm different. Physically I'm different because of the phenomenon of craving. Mentally I'm different because of the obsession of the mind. And I'm also the guy that looks at that part of the book and where it says exactly, it says, the sense of ease and comfort that comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks I see other people take with impunity. If I don't get that sense of ease and comfort, I am irritable, restless, and discontent. It precedes it by saying that. Well, I don't know about you, but I being sober today and working in a field where I get to do a little marketing once in a while, if I ever left AA and started an alcohol company, I would call it Ease and Comfort, because that just sounds so nice, you know? Ease and comfort. And when I think about that, I got ease and comfort instantly. And the other people, they seem to drink without any consequence at all. They drink, they don't go to jail. I'm allergic to alcohol. When I drink, I break out in handcuffs. It's a terrible, terrible thing. When I drink, I have these crazy problems, and my friends, they go to work the next day. I wake up at 3 and go, crap, where am I going to work? You know, because they've already told me I'm going to be gone. You know, I don't understand what that happens. I have all these things that keep coming up and get piled on top of me. I've got all these felony charges. I've got all this crap on me, and they keep telling me don't drink. And I say, okay, I'm not going to drink. And then this little thing goes, but Kelvin, those little Mickey wide mouths, they're small, like a kid could hold them. You know, they're only like 10 ounces. They're not even a full beer. They're just tiny. And they're green, and the bottle's nice. Just one of those, you can have just one of those. You'd be fine. But unfortunately, he comes with 5 of his friends. And I don't want him to be lonely. I'm not the guy who breaks up families. So I go in there, and I'm not drinking. I'm not going to drink. So I go, well, if I just get 6 of them, then I can have one maybe next week because I'm not drinking, and maybe 2 because Super Bowl's coming up, you know? I mean, that makes sense, right? But then, see, I've got this problem because I'm cheap. And I go, well, damn, why would I buy six when for $7 more, I can bring the whole family. Everybody's coming over, you know. So I buy the case. Let me tell you what one little Mickey's wide mouth gets you. One little Mickey's wide mouth gets you insulation of a riot on your record. That's what it does for me. I don't know about you, but I had one, and I end up at a rave, and pretty soon I'm saying, let's burn this thing down. Nobody ever listens to me. What the hell are they doing listening, you know? So everybody starts tearing everything up, and when the cops come, they all do this, you know? And I'm like, what? It was a Mickey, you know? That's all I'm thinking. No, that happens to me. That happens to me. Because I'm not picky. My idea of a fine wine is Mad Dog 2020, you know? I mean, my idea of a fine wine is Thunderbird, okay? I mean, I just wish I was older so I could have drank Ripple. Because I hear people talk about that. That stuff sounds awesome, you know? So I've got this picture in my mind of these things, and they don't seem to add up. Two and two is making six all day long. I don't understand why I can't just have one or two. So when I come to Alcoholics Anonymous and they explain to me that I have this obsession of the mind that tells me that turning back to the drink is an okay thing to do and it makes sense for me to do, I now understand, oh, that's why I do that. That little monkey that sits on my shoulder and tells me go ahead, that's just part of my disease, that I'm not really crazy like the psychologist is trying to tell me, that they're trying to tell me you're borderline schizophrenic, you know? That they want to put me on Haldol for an antipsychotic because I told them I heard voices. It's noisy in my head, damn it. Of course I heard voices, you know? I mean, they're telling me things. They're saying, well, you got to go do this and you got to go do that. And of course, that girl, she won't really leave you if you drink tonight. You're the best thing that's ever happened to her, you know? And that's the things that go through my head. That's what happens to me. And I return back to the drink and I return back to the insanity. And the book tells me, to drink is to die. And I started killing myself slowly and more slowly and more slowly. And for a guy like me, I don't get lucky. I don't get to be one of the people that dies. I'm somebody that if I went back to the drink, I would get to live a long time and a lot of pain. I'm convinced of that. So I end up at this AA meeting that night, and they get up there at this podium, and this guy starts talking. He's telling his story, this guy Kenny that's in my home group to this day. I love Kenny. And he starts talking about how he feels in his gut. And I get scared, and I do what any newcomer would do. I run the heck out of that meeting before it's even over. And I go over to my buddy's house, and I grab a beer, and I throw the first one back. And I grab the second one. I don't even think I finished it. Because the only thing running through my mind is, you are a loser. You've been thrown out of college. You've got all these felonies hanging over your head. What the heck is wrong with you? Somebody said welcome to you tonight. Nobody says welcome to you anymore. You're such a loser. And my family was leaving for the weekend, and I'm a grown man, and I'm still living with, and I moved back in with my parents. Okay, I mean it's a bad deal. And for anybody out there who's living with your parents, I'm not saying that you're bad or anything like that. Because I said that at a conference one time, and this guy comes up to me, and he's like 33, and he goes, "I still live with my mom." And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm like, sorry, man, didn't mean to say anything. But my parents leave, and I'm not a guy who got here through treatment. I'm not a guy who got here through being able to go somewhere and dry out. I dried out that weekend, and I went into the DTs, and I threw up blood, and I couldn't keep anything down for 3 days. Because, see, by this time, I'm drinking to the point where I'm starting to pass out. And if you have to be able to earn a living, you need a little something else to keep you going throughout the day. So I'm pumping all kinds of stuff into my system. I am a human vacuum of self-gratification is what I really am, you know. Because if I think it's going to make me feel good, I go, and I just suck it right up, you know. My favorite drink is free. My favorite drug is what do you got? You know, I mean, if you think, you tell me aspirin's going to get me off, I'm taking out stock and bear, okay? I'm like all over the place. If I think a woman's going to make me feel better, boom, I'm on that deal. If I think a new car's going to make me feel better, boom, I'm on that deal. A job, anything, something's going to make me feel better than the way I'm feeling right now, I'm going to grab it and I'm going to take it in. That's what I do. I'm a vacuum of that stuff. I take it and I use it, and it's a bad deal. And my sponsor, I love the way he described it. Here's the problem with a guy like me doing drugs. I do drugs like an alcoholic, okay? A drug addict, they do their drugs and they do their little addicty drug ways, you know, and they're pretty cool with it, you know. But an alcoholic starts doing drugs. Have you ever seen the movie The Matrix? And Morpheus reaches across and he goes, "You want the red pill or the blue pill?" I don't know what goes through your head, but in my head, I'm like, can I get three of those red pills? You know? What happens if I take them both at the same time? You know? What's going to go on? You know, I mean, that's what I start thinking. You know, that's what happens in my head. I don't understand it, you know? And I don't think there's a chemist out there that can find better combinations than we come up with. You know, okay, I'm going to drink this fifth of tequila, and I'm going to start getting a little sleepy, so I better take a handful of these, and then, oh, and then I'm going to get too wired, so I better smoke some of this, and then I'm going to get nauseous, so I better drink some more of this, because I'm really going to be thirsty. And I just run these scenarios through my head, and I'm like, yeah, and then I'll be happy, you know? I don't know anybody that has to concentrate that damn hard to be happy besides me, you know? I'm the guy that looks for it. I will try whatever I can to twist it all together. And I end up going and getting this feeling as I'm sitting in my house, and I don't know what I'm going to do. Because I know that if I go to work, that there's beer in the shop, and I'm going to drink. So my parents would pick their grown son up from work, or I would stay in the job site and let them leave, and they would come pick me up there, because I knew if I went to the shop, I'd drink. And I waited till that next Thursday. Now, never mind, I could have went to 100 other meetings during the week, but I'm waiting till that next Thursday because somebody there said welcome to me. And I walked into that meeting that Thursday, and I had actually shaved some of the stuff off on the sides, and I'd put a baseball cap on, you know, and I came into that meeting broken, bruised, torn, and psychotic. The type of psychotic where you can't sleep, because you're coming down off of everything and you've watched every infomercial on the planet where you can start reciting 800 numbers to people for Bowflex, Soloflex, that magic bullet and all that other stuff that they have on there late at night. When you watch that stuff, that's me. I'm nuts by the time I come in there. And I come walking up that sidewalk to that meeting and there's a group of them. And for anybody who knows who them are, then you know who they are. The people that are happy. The AA people. The ones that say those things to you that make you want to tear their throat out, like, keep coming back, it works. Let go and let God. You better pray let go of your throat before you die, you know? I mean, I hated AA, and I hated the people in AA. They sucked because they were happy, and they smile at you, and they shake your hand, and they'd say, keep coming back. Some guy said, think to me, and I swear there should have been a homicide that day because he's looking at me, and they're saying these cutesy AA crap, you know? And they started winking at each other after they said, do you have a sponsor? I'm like, no.
He doesn't have a sponsor.
You know, and I'm like, oh, no, I ain't rolling like that. You know, I mean, we are not doing this deal. You know, I'm going to leave, you know. And this guy comes up to me and he shakes my hand and he says, welcome to the meeting. You were here last week, right? Now, if he would have taken a shot at me, or if he would have said, oh, it looks like you had happy feet last week, I'd have swung as hard as I could. He'd have been spitting chiclets, and you'd have somebody else standing here tonight, you know? The guy saved my life because he showed me kindness when I walked in the door. And he said, would you read How It Works for us this evening? And I'm sitting there going, what? What in the hell are you talking about, you know? And they're like, well, you read this for us. And I don't know about you, but I'm all about attention. So I said, okay, yes, I'll do that. And that guy ended up being my first sponsor. And after the meeting, he comes up to me and he says, you know, when you read How It Works tonight, a light came on for me and I really understood step eight. And I kind of puffed my shoulders up. I was like, I'll read every week if y'all want me to, man. I'm all about saving people. You know, I'm like all excited. And he's like, no, other newcomers need a chance. And he's trying to usher me away from other people because he knew he had a live one, you know? And there's sponsor, you know, and I'm like, sponsor. Race cars. Hey, I'm broke. This guy's wearing a tie. He gave me a business card that said Kraft on it. This guy's got to have, I'm way behind on credit cards, man. You want to be my, you know, so I've got it in my mind. Somebody helps you out with your bills. They float you on a little bit, get you sober, give you some financial planning, you know. buy you some things, put you in a nice suit like they're wearing, you know, take you down to the tailor shop, you know, you get a car on a finance plan. I mean, I had the whole thing all down, you know. And all I really learned is that they yell at you and tell you to do things you don't want to do, make you go places that you don't want to be. You know, we're going to go to the hospital tonight. Great. Thanks a lot. You know, I'm going to go kill myself in the corner. And then after that, they say, hey, we're going to do these steps. And I'm like, man, I am not walking anywhere, okay? I want nothing to do with that crap. I want nothing to do with it. You guys are too happy. And so then I came up with a philosophy in AA. They're really smoking dope. They got to be. Because there is no way in hell you can be happy and sober and doing that stuff. You can't marry those two up. So I'm starting to hang around the guys that look like they'd be the dealers in the group, you know? So I'm like, hey, how you doing? So what are you guys doing tonight? Fellowship, great, I'll be over there. How much do I need? You know, I mean, I don't know what they're doing. And they're going to coffee, you know? I hated coffee, you know? And here's why I hated coffee. Because I drink it by the gallon, and I try to sleep at night, and I work construction. I have to be up at 5 in the morning, so I'm sitting there till 4, just shaking, you know, smoking cigarettes. And I get an hour of sleep, wake up, hit the damn alarm, and I get out the road, and I can't go. My sponsor told me I'd have to call him if I was going to call in sick to work. I'm like, I'm not calling that guy this morning. Screw him. I'm going to work. And I go to work, and then he said, I want you to start making your bed. I'm like, I am a grown man. I am not making my bed. And he said, why? And I said, because you guys have me out drinking coffee every damn night, and I can't sleep, and I get into the bed, and I finally pass out, and I get up in the morning, and I'm almost late for work, and everything else, and I'm not making my bed. So I started making my bed, and because he told me to. At my home group, we wear ties on our speaker meeting night, and we were talking about it a little bit earlier today. Oh, by the way, Judy, thanks for the gum. I don't know. You're Judy? Thank you for the gum. Appreciate it. I know that's completely random, but that's how I am. It's noisy. But so I'm doing these things that these guys tell me to do. And they people say, well, why do you guys wear ties to your meeting? And I said, well, it's because the meeting's open every week and people's families come in, and my sponsor looked at me one time and he said, because I was mad, because I'm a construction worker, you know, and it's 90 degrees and I'm shoveling concrete all day, and then they say, put your tie on and come to the meeting, you know, and I'm hot and sweaty and I'm like, why do I have to wear a tie? And he said, well, you may be, and I pray to God this never happens, but you may be the only example of AA somebody gets to see someday. You may be the only example of a big book they ever get to see. So if you're ever behind the podium, I want you in a tie. And at the night of your home group, I want you in a tie. And I'm like, damn it. You know, I can't disagree with that. I might be that guy someday. And it scares me, but it might be true. I mean, it might happen. I might be the only example of a big book somebody gets to see. So I always have to be watching. And so now when people say, why do you wear a tie to your home group? I just say, because my sponsor told me to, and so should you. And then I'm done. I get tired of explaining things to people. Other things to do. And I got to say something real quick. When I said I drank too much tequila and like peed in the corner, you can always tell who the Al-Anons are in the room when I say that. And you can tell who the drunks are too, because when I say, and I got drunk and I peed in the corner, drunks, they're laughing. They're like, ah! And the Al-Anons, you see this look come over them? And they go, damn it, I had to clean that up. And so I can always tell who they are in the room. It's just, it's real easy for me to just go, hey, how you doing? Ah, you know? So I had to say that. And I got going in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got going with this sponsor, and I got going and going to these roundups. I'm from North Dakota. Brothers don't do roundups, okay? We don't go rope calves and all that other stuff. I mean, we just don't do it, okay? And I am not going to go do this roundup thing. Well, they say, well, roundups where we go listen to AA speakers. And I'm like, great. How about after that we just take each other taking turns bashing each other's toes with a ball-peen hammer. Sounds like a lot of fun, you know? I didn't want to go listen to AA speakers because I had to listen to my sponsor all the dang time. And he'd rope some other poor little sucker in and get him over there, and he'd be like, "And why do we have a sponsor?" And I'd recite it, "Because we need an unemotional point of view in our lives and a guide through the steps and blah, 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 blah." And he'd be brainwashing him. I'd be watching him do it. And I'd watch that poor guy and I'm like, "Run, one while you can. They're going to make you do things." So I got tired of AA speakers right away. And I was out doing Alcoholics Anonymous. And I say this and some people just go, "Oh." And then old timers fall over and have heart attacks. It's a terrible deal. But here it is. At my home group, there was a thing that was said at that time where I first sobered up, and it said, "Anybody willing to be a sponsor, raise your hand." I am exactly 12 days sober. And I'm sitting next to my sponsor at the meeting, and he elbows me, and my arm goes up in the air. It's a reaction. And this kid comes up to me with his pants down to here. Every other word is mother something. And he's just wild. And he's in the boys' ranch. And he goes, "I was wondering if you'd sponsor me." And I'm like, "Are you going to coffee?" I was already becoming them, you know? And I was like, and he was like, "Yeah." And I said, "I'll talk to you there." And I go up to my sponsor. And I'm like, "I got to do this thing. This guy asked me to sponsor, blah, blah, blah." He goes, "Say yes." And what he did is he sponsored that guy through me. And he got me immediately working with another alcoholic. Immediately doing that. And that guy, I was attached to that guy. And I was, everywhere I went, he went. If we were going to a meeting, I was dragging him. I figured if I'm going to be tortured, so is he, you know. And we're going, and we're going, and we're going, and we're going, and we're going. And I go out, and they wouldn't let you be alone with the Boys Ranch kids, so that you had to, like, there'd be a staff member, like, way off in the corner somewhere behind a cloak, you know, peering out, making sure you weren't telling them not to run or something. And I was good. My sponsor would look at me and he'd say, "All right, I want you to, we're going to go through the stuff in the book." And we'd go through the book and I'd highlight and I'd get everything down. And as soon as I was done with that, I'd run over and I'd grab this guy and I'd start going through the book with him immediately because it was fresh, you know. And one day this lady comes up to me and she goes, "My," she said, "you really seem to have a very good understanding of the program and of the big book." She goes, "How long have you been sober?" And I went, "About 9 weeks." And she, her jaw hit the floor. I go, "Hey, lady, some of us just catch on to this thing a little faster than others." And and I'm doing AA. And I'm going all over the place. But the problem is I've got this little thing that crept up within me. It's a nasty word, judgment. I don't know if anybody knows about that. But it's starting to eat on me a little bit. And I'm doing the steps, and I did my four step, and I did my fifth step. And I'm not saying that way was wrong, but at the end of my fifth step, we burned my fourth step, which was really interesting when I got to the eighth step when it says, referring back to our list, I'm like, "Oh, hell, I got to think of that stuff again?" You know, so we burned my first four step, and I'm out there and I'm doing all this stuff in AA, and I'm starting to get some success in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am just getting so dang wonderful that I'm getting ready to float right out of Alcoholics Anonymous by the time I'm about 8 years sober. I'm just insane in the middle of AA. On the outside, I look like the poster child of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was sponsoring 10 guys, and I'm speaking at this conference, and I'm the co-chairman of the state roundup, I'm the past chairman of the intergroup, and I'm doing all this stuff, and I've got my AA resume anytime you want to hear it. Bam, 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 bam. You know, I got it on, it's on repeat. I'm ready to rattle it off for you, because if somebody says anything to me, I say, "You can't say anything like that to me. Last time I checked, kept score, you don't sponsor enough people to say that to me, so you're off the list. Uh-huh. You know, next time I checked, you only went to 2 meetings a week. You can't say anything to me." And what I'm doing is I'm slowly cutting myself off and slowly walking out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't even see it happening. And I am completely disconnecting myself from other people because of this stupid three-letter word you keep talking about called God. I hate the word God. Because I've got this Old Testament idea. My dad's a Southern Baptist, remember? I'm the confirmation kid, remember? And I get this idea of God, the Old Testament idea of God. Hellfire and brimstone, you know. You sin? Ha-ha! Drowned, you know. That's how I see God. You get too powerful, he sends a woman in to destroy you and cut off all of your hair. That's God. God is evil because he allows bad things to happen. Earthquakes?
God's everything.
Guess what? You just killed 5,000 people. Congratulations, God. I hope you like it. That's what I came into AA with, and that's what I kept in AA for almost 8 years. But I'm the guy in the meetings. I'm the guy in the meetings that when you come into the meeting, I'm talking about this spiritual program of action that reconnects you with the power. That we're disconnected from the power, as it tells me in We Agnostics. Because, see, God blessed me with a high IQ. So I can remember a lot of things. I read it, I remember it, I can see it. I can see the words. So I'm rattling it off. Because I don't want to be known as a guy who's not spiritual in AA. See, you can't not believe in God and stay here, so I'm pretending. I'm pretending to believe in something I don't believe in. I'm pretending, as I sit in meetings, to have a connection and talking about my connection when I'm about as connected as the moon is to us right now. I feel that far away from it. And I'm sitting there, and I'm on my knees in the morning, and I'm still praying to the ceiling. And I'm on my knees in the morning because my sponsor told me I had to be. And I'm on my knees at night because he told me I had to be. And I'd say that third step prayer, thanks, you know, I'm going to go kill myself. You know, I'm suicidal, and I'm 8 years sober. And I'm turning into an animal in Alcoholics Anonymous, but not in meetings, because you see me at meetings. So instead, by the time I get sober, and I meet this girl, and I love my wife, and we have a little girl, we have a daughter. My daughter is my daughter's unbelievable, because she looks like her mom and not me. And I'm the kind of guy that comes home and they're paying for me not having a relationship with God. They're paying for it. They're walking on eggshells. And a pipe got broke or something and my basement floods out. And I'm 8 years sober. I got my AA resume right here. It's right here. You know, the scoreboard is right here. And I can't put my finger on what the problem is. Because I see I do it all. I'm on the hotline list. I take the calls at 2 in the morning. I do all the stuff. And then I get to be mad at God. And I'm like, God, what is your deal? Why am I like this? Sober. Because see, I don't have anything to blame it on. I don't have anything to blame it on. And my pipe breaks in my basement. And then the toilet plugs upstairs. And my wife, she bought those damn designer plungers, you know. The ones that are pretty and match the bathroom, but they don't plunge for crap, you know. It's like if you ever need... She threw away my big, nasty black with the cup thing on the bottom that you could suck a golf ball through a garden hose with, you know. I mean, that plunger. She throws that away, and she gets the designer one because it matches the wallpaper trim, okay. And the toilet plugs. And I'm sitting there in this bathroom and I'm plunging with this plunger. And I'm plunging. And she goes, why don't you let me try? I have pretty good luck with it. And I'm like, okay, fine. Whatever you do, don't flush the toilet. She plunges like 4.5 times and flushes the toilet. And I turn 8 years sober, active member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I grab my wife and I throw her across the bathroom into the door right in front of my daughter. And my wife is a strong woman and she looks at me and she takes my daughter and she goes in the other room. I'm sober in AA. And I throw my wife across the bathroom. And this is the guy that when I grew up in a household, there was a lot of that stuff. And one day my parents are literally in a fist fight and I throw my mom, I'm big by now, and I throw my mom to one side, I throw my dad to the other, and I look at him, I said, you're terrible parents and I'll never be anything like you. And I'm sitting there at that moment, just like them. And I'm destroyed. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. 2 days later, a day later, I'm sitting on the couch, and I'm just shattered. I'm sitting on the couch. My little girl, who I love, jumps on my lap, and her knee hits me on the thigh. And she just comes running. She goes, "Daddy," and jumps on my lap. And I grab her by the shoulders, and I scream in her face, and I shake her. And I end up in my den that night, rolling over the revolver on my .357, loaded, wondering if I should kill myself or not. That's what I get with no God. That's what I get pretending to have God. That's what I get in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous in the program. And I think there's a big difference between being in the program and being in the fellowship. And I was at a conference, and I love the way Sandy said it. He said, "I've never watched anybody leave the program of AA, but I've watched a lot of people walk out of the fellowship." And see, I had a program, so no matter what, if you have a program, you can fall down and you can scrape yourself up, and there's a program there to catch you, to refall back on, and get to the point where my sponsor calls a second surrender in Alcoholics Anonymous. You can get there if you have a program. If all you have is a fellowship, if that's all you have and you don't have a program to lie back on, you could end up being one of those people that just get to disappear and walk right out of it. Because the fellowship has people and the program has God. And people are fallible and He is not. So I had something there, and I had a connection that I didn't realize that I had, not because of me, but in spite of me. There was something taking care of me. And what I learned was is... And we agnostic, it says deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. It says deep down. So it's in there, it's sitting in my gut. It's there. And that hole is there. But the thing is that's a God-shaped hole. It's a God-shaped hole I have in my gut. But God, he doesn't fit there. See? Because this money will fit in there, and that'll fill it up. It's nice and big, and lots of it fills that hole in good. And as soon as I bend over, it falls out. It's not a God-shaped. It's a car-shaped hole. A new car will fill the hole. It's a woman-shaped hole. It's a job-shaped hole. It's a gambling-shaped hole. It's a shaped hole that only God fills. And I'm sitting there trying to fill it. But deep down... inside of me, the answer was there. So I have to dig. And archaeologists, they're amazing. They dig down, and they dig, and they dig, and they dig, and they get down to the treasure. And then they brush it off, and they clean it up, and they bring it up. And the world gets to enjoy it. And so when I got to dig down and grab that thing, and I got that thing that's God, and I got to put it in that hole, it filled it up. And the world gets to enjoy it. Which means that my wife doesn't have to walk on eggshells. It means my little girl doesn't get screamed at in her face. It means that those things that I was and those things that I was doing don't get to happen when there's a God in that hole. And it was kind of a funny thing because I still had this hang-up. I got this hang-up about this God thing. And my hang-up is, my big problem is, the big situation is that He's sitting there, and I know that He's still attached to all those bad things. He's attached to the earthquakes and the rapists and the molesters and everything else, because God is everything. He's not attached to any of those things. See, in my mind, I get to choose my own conception of God. The book tells me no matter how limited it is. Well, I don't think mine's really limited because I have an ego, and I think mine's best and better than everybody else's. But I'm just kidding. I really don't think that. So I think that anything that's good is God. Anything that's not good is because there's selfish people like me out there that won't do His will and they choose to take those bad actions. I believe a little bit in karma. I do. Because I was flying out to go to another conference, and I was out there, and there was a old couple, and they were trying to put their baggage up in the their carry-on up, and there was no space. So I took my carry-ons out and put them under my legs for 3.5 hours, you know. And I'm sitting there, and it was real. I felt really spiritual for about 45 minutes, and after that I got resentful. And they were thanking me, and they were like, oh, thank you so much. And I'm like, hey, no problem. Don't worry about it. You know, other people around me are like, wow, that was really nice of you. And see, the difference is that when I used to hear stuff like that, and when I'm not connected and I hear stuff like that, and I go, well, you know. When I'm connected and I hear stuff like that, I close my eyes real briefly for a second, and I say, look what your hand has done. Because anything that's good that comes from me is not of me, it is of God. Anything that's good that comes from me. Me, I'm the guy that's irritable, restless, and discontent. Me, I'm the guy that stomps on people's faces until they need corrective surgery. Me, I'm the guy that kicks people's front doors in. Me, that's me. Those things were not God. Those things were me, not doing His will. And I got a chance to slowly start to pull out of the judgment. I got a chance to slowly start dismantling the judgment machine, as my sponsor calls it. And I'll tell you, some interesting things happened. My AA scoreboard went away. And that's really an interesting thing, because the problem with my AA scoreboard is that you can't see it. But I know it, and it's clicking off right up here. It's just rolling over. It keeps, and you are always at zero, and I'm clicking, and I'm going, well, nope, see, you don't, nope, blah, blah, blah. And I got it, and it's running. It's like a slot machine that hit megabucks, you know? That thing's rolling off. And I got it up here. I know the score. And I know the score, and I know the score, and I know the score. And when the scoreboard gets to go away is when I'm doing somebody else's will besides my own. And that doesn't mean that I do it all the time. You know, I struggle in Alcoholics Anonymous sometime to be connected sometimes. There's days that I'm so connected that, I mean, I've got God's ray beam shooting out of my butt. You know, I'm just floating through the day, you know. Newcomer, you've got God. You know, I mean, I'm doing all that stuff. I look like a southern, like one of those evangelists, you know, coming through. Sometimes those days are dangerous for me, you know, because I forget. Doesn't everybody have him like you? You know, no. Those are the days that I have to really be careful. Those are the days. So I have to find a balance. I have to find a balance of being humble enough to accept the will of something other than myself. And, you know, I've had a lot of bad stuff happen to me in AA. Just a ton of it. My daughter almost died at birth, you know. And my wife ends up having a heart problem. We go in, and she gets a little procedure done, and it goes wrong, and she has to get a pacemaker. And then my father-in-law just in the last year and a half, got pancreas cancer, and they had to live in my house, and I live in a twin home. Like him and my mother-in-law, North Dakota's rural, and Fargo has the best doctors in the state. So they're staying with me. It's a twin home, 3 bedrooms. It is not built for 5 people. So I got to live complete love and tolerance while that was going on. And I'm getting snitty because I can't watch the TV program I'm going through. He's going through chemo, you know? And I'm sitting there going, damn it, I want to watch Grey's Anatomy, you know? And he's watching old war movies, and I can't stand them. They're in black and white. And if I see One River Over Iwo Jima one more time, I swear to God I'm killing somebody, you know? And I'm sitting there in that house, and I call my sponsor, and I'm like, blah, 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 blah. And he goes, I'm sorry, Kelvin, are you going through chemo? And I go, oh, damn. Okay, gotcha. And I'm sitting through another one of those frickin' war movies, just smiling, you know? I don't like John Wayne in those war movies either. I had like a resentment. I had to do like some work on it, you know? I'm like, he is not a good actor at all. Not even close. And his action scenes are like, you know? I mean, it's terrible. Why would you watch that crap, you know? And he's sitting there smiling, and I'm like, oh. It's like pulling teeth. Just shove bamboo slits under my nails, please, you know? So I'm learning. I'm learning, I'm growing, and I'm doing the deal. And I'll tell you, AA shows up for me. I also, my leg got hurt about 5 years ago in AA, and I blew an Achilles, it was misdiagnosed. Long story short, I had 7 surgeries in 5 months and almost lost my leg from the knee down. And people in AA came to my house and scrubbed the floors in my house because that's what I do at home. My wife does a lot of things, and I have some certain things. I iron clothes and I scrub the floors and I do some things like that. That's part of what I do. And the Al-Anons bow to you. Thank you very much. oh, you're not Al-Anons? Okay, then you're really sick. that's the things I do. And members of AA showed up at my house and scrubbed the floors at my house. My driveway didn't have a flake of snow on it the whole winter. My lawn has never looked better. I haven't been able to get my lawn looking as good as they did, you know, during that time. And it was a bad deal. And AA showed up, and I was in the hospital for long periods. And they'd show up and they'd have meetings with me in the hospital. And it was amazing. It was amazing how AA shows up. It's amazing how it shows up. And this is a place that I didn't want to be. It's a place when the people came up and smiled at me that I hated. And it's a place today that I get to live in a grace that is not of me. It's a place I get to live today when I wake up in the morning and I read 86, 87, and 88. And it's funny, one of the things that's funny about the steps, and not until step 10 does it tell me that I get my will back. It says, you do these things because it's the proper use of the will. I'm like, oh, so I get my will back in step 10. The first place it tells me I get my own thinking back is step 11. It says, if you do things like this, then your thoughts will be out throughout the day can be this. And it tells me that I get to get my thinking back in step 11. And the thing that's also funny is the shortest paragraph in the book is on page 88, and it says, it works, it really does. And I'm a guy who didn't think anything would ever work for me. But it tells me it works, it really does. So today I live, I'm not a construction worker anymore. I have a job that is, I wake up most mornings and I wonder how the heck I'm doing it. I sell copiers and I manage an office for the state of North Dakota, and I manage the state of North Dakota, and I do that, and it's just crazy. I mean, I have people that work for me, and it's like they, you know, I'm building people and teaching them how to sell and doing all this stuff, and it's unbelievable. And I'm not the guy, and I'm the guy that can't wake up in the morning to go into work. Okay? That's me. And today I'm doing something completely different. Today mine and my wife's marriage has never been better, you know? We just had Valentine's Day, and I came in from the meeting on Tuesday night after the Yahoo 3 posse over here decided they were going to drive to Oregon, and I come walking in and I look over at the table, and I see the stuff on the table, but I'm gonna pretend I don't see it in the morning, because when my little girl wakes up, she runs out there and she grabs my hand and she pulls me over the table. And her and my wife had made brownies, like I need more brownies, but they had made brownies and cut little hearts with cookie cutters out of these brownies. Can't believe that, you know. And at home, when I get on my knees to pray, my little girl gets on her knees next to me, and I bought her a little book for Christmas. Not an AA book, thank God, please, no AA book. but I got her this little kid's Bible, you know. And she reads her little book right next to me in the morning, And on the weekends when I wake up, sometimes I like to sleep to about 8:30 if I can, and she'll crawl into bed next to me, and I wake up, open up, and I look at her, and she gets close to me. She goes, "Daddy," and I go, "What?" She goes, "Your breath stinks." So I know I got to go brush my teeth, and during the week I have guys that I sponsor that call me. In the morning, right as I'm getting ready for work, they call me between 6:45 and 7:15 in the morning, so I get to awaken into consciousness in service of someone else. If you're in here tonight and you don't have a sponsor, for God's sakes, please get one. Please get one. Look for one of them. One of them. One of those people that are coming up and shaking your hand. Somebody that's holding one of these, preferably, one of these big books. If you're new and you don't know what this is, it's a big book. And the program is in there. The fellowship is out here, but the program's in here. And if you're going to have a chance to stay in here, it's funny, and I'm not a guy who likes to read stuff out of the book from the podium, but I don't like to mess this up. It says, if we fail to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again, and if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. And I love the simplicity of that, because it tells me that I need to be in here doing work in here, working with other alcoholics in here. Otherwise, when the stuff happens, I'm not going to be able to stay. And I love in the book when it says, on the occasions that it says it, of that faith without works is dead. See, I think, and this is my experience, one of the worst things that was said to me was, pray about it. You know, that was everybody's answer that seemed to be around me. They would say, oh, just pray about it. Just pray about it. If I'm just praying about it, if I'm just praying about not gambling, because I'm a guy who can't gamble, if I'm just praying about not gambling, and I'm still walking over to the dang blackjack table, it's not going to work. I have to have the works. The faith part of it is the prayer. If I keep taking the action, it's the works part of it that I have to do too. If I say, God, I want to get up for work in the morning, and then I'm hitting the snooze 7 times, I'm not doing the works. So you can pray all you want, but if you're not doing the works, that's not going to matter, because the prayer will not connect with it, and then the combination of the two will not create recovery. The faith and the works creates the recovery. And that was one of the things that I never thought was going to be possible for me, is that I was going to be able to have recovery here. I didn't think I was ever going to have the ability to be able to live here and look people in the eye and not have to be afraid. I didn't know that when I came to AA, when they told me to go shake newcomers' hands, and I didn't want to do it, and he said, go shake people's hands. I don't want to shake their hands. I don't know them, and that guy smells. He said, you smelled when you got here. Go shake his hand. And I go shake that guy's hand. My entire existence and the way I earn money today is walking into random people's offices that I don't know, that may smell, and shake their hands. I didn't know what I was getting taught to do was to be able to be a salesman. Ha! You know,
for any newcomers out there, there's perks. No.
So I got a chance to learn, and I get a chance to live, and I get a chance to love here. You know, the book tells me that the love and tolerance of others is our code, and I used to say that that was good because that allowed me to be able to tolerate you. And I think that the opposite of that is true. That's in the book so that people can love and tolerate me. It means that no matter how judgmental, no matter how self-righteous, no matter how smugly superior I've been to other people throughout my existence in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I have a program that can reconnect me with them and that can reconnect me with God. And I'm going to close up here. And I just really want to thank the committee for giving me the honor and the privilege of being able to come here. You have a beautiful state. You have beautiful people here. I want to thank Alcoholics Anonymous for a life that is beyond anything that I could have ever asked for or imagined. And I want to thank a God that I did not understand, that I did not know, for when I'm doing His will, for existing within me. Because the book tells me that I'll be taken care of if I do His work well. And if you do His work well, it works. It really does. That's all I've got. Thanks.